yourself, little man. Don't let them tell you that they have the plan, 'cause everyone's lost chin deep in the sand. And what they're trying to sell to you, you shouldn't be buying. Well, a very hearty welcome to you to a show called Thinking Clearly. This is Bob Frelick.
I'm Julia Minton.
And we're here tonight to present another episode of Clear Thinking and Critical Thinking and related topics like we do the first Thursday of every month.
Can you tell us who that great opening song is by?
That's by George Harab, and it's called Think for Yourself.
I just, you know, it's really growing on me.
I know.
It's really, really, I'm jamming out here on sax.
I know. I love hearing that song. We don't play it all the way through. It's kind of our theme song, and George was gracious enough to give us permission to use that song, and really fits with our show. I love it. And by the way, if you have any comments for us, any suggestions for other topics that we haven't covered,
find us on Facebook, Thinking Clearly Radio. Just search for us in your search bar on Facebook, and we'll just pop right up there. And then you can also find us podcasting.
Wow. How did they do that?
Yeah, it's like living in the future.
And you can go to Thinking Clearly. That's all just one word, no spaces, thinkingclearly.libsyn.com. And Libsyn is spelled Libsyn.
And if you're a podcaster, just open up your podcast app, whichever that is, and add feed, search for Thinking Clearly. We'll pop right up. Whether you use iTunes, I use Beyond Pod, there's a lot of options out there. Just add feed Thinking Clearly Radio.
We've got some quotes that we found that kind of lead us into the topic for this evening. And you found a couple quotes that you'd like to compare and contrast, right?
I have two quotes. They're both from people who are in the same type of business. And I just thought it was interesting. So I was going to start with this one. Mind you, these are two different quotes. The first is, people of different faiths, like yours and mine, sometimes wonder where we can meet in common purpose. When there's so many differences in creed and theology, surely the answer is we can meet in service and shared moral convictions about our nation stemming from common worldview.
That's a hint.
That is a hint.
Yeah, see if you can guess what the topic is tonight. What's the other quote?
Well, first I want to say that was by Mitt Romney.
Okay.
And
what business is he in?
That's for another show.
Okay.
And the other quote I have here is, my philosophy comes from a worldview that looks at the world as one. It's a holistic view that sees the world as interconnected and interdependent and integrated in so many different ways, which informs my politics.
All right. And who was that?
That was Dennis Kucinich.
Ah, all right.
What business is he in?
I'm not sure. They're both politicos.
Yes.
All right. Well, my quote is this, and it's a quote by American paleontologist and evolutionary biologist and historian of science, best-selling author.
Sounds like someone who reads more books than the people I quoted.
Yeah. Stephen Jay Gould. And he passed away, you know, a number of years back, 2002, but it contributed a lot of things, including the punctuated equilibrium, the theory of punctuated equilibrium, which kind of contrasted with this gradualism that we usually think of in terms of evolution, species evolving. Mm-hmm. You know, saying that there's a long period of stasis, mm-hmm. where the species is pretty stable, and then it can be punctuated by a relatively quick mm-hmm. evolution rather than just gradual mm-hmm. changes. So he was a contributor, very well respected paleontologist, evolutionary biologist, and he said, nothing is more dangerous than a dogmatic worldview. Nothing more constraining, more binding to innovation, more destructive to openness and to novelty. Well, what do you think our topic is tonight? It's not politics. It's not evolutionary biology, although evolutionary biology probably comes into the picture.
Would be handy in politics.
Well, it would be worldview.
Oh.
And that's what we're going to talk about tonight.
We're going
to talk about what it is and why the concept is crucial to critical thinking. What's the relationship between critical thinking and worldview. Remember, critical thinking is really evaluating a robust bunch of evidence that we've found that's relevant to some topic, and from that we use logic to infer or reason towards a conclusion. So evidence-based conclusions essentially is the short description of critical thinking.
And sometimes critical thinking doesn't necessarily bring you to the conclusions that you want or conclusions at all, but it can help clarify the thinking that you are, in fact, participating in.
And one of the things that we do stress in this show and have stressed a lot is that it's really important to, at the start of a conversation or the start of something that you're writing, to define your terms. So why don't you start with a definition of worldview?
And this is really important because I know I've been exposed to the concept of worldview in a number of different ways, and it doesn't always mean quite the same thing to everybody.
Yeah.
So this is where this is important. You may, you know, when Bob said worldview, he had a certain idea, and then I heard worldview and I had a certain idea, and it took us a while to talk about it and kind of get on the same page.
Yeah. Dennis Kucinich and Mitt Romney probably had their own definitions.
So in this case, worldview, the concept of worldview has been used in philosophy, psychology, theology, where I'm familiar with it, and other disciplines, sociology, social psychology. And it has different meanings and different definitions in these fields because it's, you know, you're trying to get to a different meat of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
One definition, a worldview is a way of describing the universe and life within it, both in terms of what is and what ought to be. A given worldview is a set of beliefs that includes limiting statements and assumptions about what exists and what does not.
Very good. And that's a paper titled The Psychology of Worldviews. And it was published in the Review of General Psychology. And what is and what should be, right?
We've mm-hmm.
had
We've
a
talked
whole
about
show
ought.
On that.
Yes.
What is and what ought to be. What mm-hmm. is called normative. I mean, it's called descriptive. You're actually, mm-hmm. you're not saying what you would like to be. It's not values-based. It's just a
this
objective
metal is hard.
Description of something, yes. Mm-hmm. And the ought, the what should be, is value-based.
Mm-hmm.
And that's generally called normative.
And it kind of touches on our morality, how we think things should be.
Yes. And it's certainly not as clear-cut trying to apply critical thinking to values-based issues as it is to descriptive issues. So, yeah, we want to make this disclaimer that the concept of worldview is not without its critics, and we're just offering it here as a useful construct to help us gain insight into our own core beliefs and help us understand others. Here's my definition. I've done a lot of thinking about worldview over the years, and this is synthesized some things from various different definitions, and here's how I would define it. The most worldview is the most general set of beliefs that human beings use to make sense of their experiences. It forms the foundation of our personal philosophy. More specifically, our worldview includes a set of assumptions. Some of them are provable, some of them are not provable, but a set of assumptions regarding the nature of reality and our process for acquiring beliefs. In other words, how do we know what we know? And in philosophy, those are called ontology and epistemology, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ontology is what's out there, what things are out there in the world.
And epistemology is how do I know it?
How do I know anything?
How do I measure it?
Exactly.
Can I trust my eyes?
Yeah. So let's get a little bit more specific about what kinds of things are included in worldview. So a person's worldview will include notions of the probability with which we believe in the existence or the non-existence of the supernatural and or deities. What else might be included in that?
I'm still kind of far out there. Coming back down to the ground, a part of our worldview might be where we think the origin of life came from, or the origin of the universe, even.
Mm-hmm. And especially important, the source of morality and values, identification of what is good and what is bad.
I always thought that was easy.
And tied to that is what? What do we tie to that, to our values? How do our values affect us in a very kind of meaningful way? Meaning is the clue to what I'm
well,
I'm going,
I guess it's
that.
It's how we go about living our lives.
And, yeah, and a sense of purpose, right? Some people can open a book and find their sense of purpose in that book. Some people have to struggle for it. And
some people don't look for it at all.
Wait for Godot to come and tell them what their sense of purpose is. I saw a cool little thing on the internet, and it was a guy at an airport.
An airport,
and he had this sign saying Godot. I thought that was funny.
That's for our folks who are fans of plays. And
yes.
Theater.
You,
I didn't think you were the artistic type, Bob.
Yeah. Well, I am artistic in some ways. In other words, I don't have a lot of talent in art, but I can appreciate art, love music. Art is an important part of life, but I look at art in a little different way than some people do.
Mm. See, I'm learning more about your worldview very moment.
And that's what we're trying to do tonight, and we will be demonstrating this through the evening here, is ways that you can get clues into other people's worldview, because it's very, very interesting and important to do that when we're in communication with other people. And it's also very important to know what our own worldview is. And most people, it's implicit rather than explicit. It's hard for people to actually know, unless they've done some thinking about this, what their worldview is. Mm-hmm. So we're going to demonstrate some of that in real time as we go through the show tonight. But let's go ahead and listen to a clip here that will kind of bring to life what worldview is.
This is Sasha. This is Sam. When they first met, it was just small talk about where to find the best coffee, the new high top she just bought, a book of poetry he found at a used bookstore, a new local band she discovered just last weekend, a zombie apocalypse movie he saw last night with some friends from his martial arts class, her homemade screen print t-shirt, and his favorite Chinese restaurant, which made them both hungry. So they got two orders of Mandarin chicken with brown rice, and then Sam opened his fortune cookie. Life's journey ends with a new beginning.
Whoa, that's deep. But in the real world, life's journey ends with an ending. When you die, you're done.
Well, yes, your body no longer works, but your soul continues to exist, don't you think?
Your soul? No, I don't believe in ghosts. We're physical creatures, material objects, just a collection of highly organized atoms. When your brain flatlines, that's it. Game over.
So you don't believe in life after death?
No. I mean, it's a comforting thought, but there's just no scientific evidence for it. I'd rather face the real world than believe in a fairy tale.
Yeah, I agree with you, Sam. It's best to face reality. But it may be that life after death is reality. I mean, think about it. If life just ends at death, then everything we do or say comes to nothing. What meaning or purpose can our lives possibly have?
Well, I guess my life has whatever meaning I choose to give it. I personally believe in truth, beauty, science, making the world a better place, saving the environment, freedom of speech, and, you know, tolerance.
Yes, that's all well and good. But what does all that matter if it ends in nothingness? What are your thoughts about God?
Which God? There are millions of gods.
The God that's in the Bible.
It's been proven that the Bible is just a bunch of mythology written by ancient desert nomads. But you know, if faith in God makes you feel good, I won't argue with that. But I personally prefer more of a rational, open-minded approach to life. Here's what I believe, Sasha. You shouldn't think anything is true unless it's been scientifically proven.
But has that belief itself been scientifically proven? Sam, you and I look at life very differently.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's like we're from different worlds.
Not different worlds, different worldviews. A worldview is the set of lenses through which you see the world around you. It's a web of habit-forming beliefs that helps you make sense of all your experiences. Through your worldview, you interpret life in a particular way. It affects how you think, how you feel, and how you live from day to day. To understand what your worldview is, think carefully about the big questions of life. Does God exist? How did everything begin? Who am I? Why am I here? Am I living a good life? What happens after I die? Cabbages and puppies don't think about this stuff, but people do. Reflecting on these questions is part of what makes us human. In fact, every one of us has a worldview. What's yours?
Well, I see that you got a little chuckle out of part of that.
I feel very conflicted. I don't know what cabbages and dogs think about. I'm not going to make assumptions that they're not having these sort of existential problems we're having. I think it's very narrow-minded to dismiss their cognitive processes without really knowing more about them.
All right. So
I'm outraged.
There's part of you that actually has an emotional reaction when other species are denigrated or seemingly denigrated by an amplification of what human beings have as their potential.
See, I see what you're doing, Bob. We're going back to our heated debate last month. I'm going back to our heated debate last month.
Okay.
And I'm going to throw in a little nuance. I wouldn't disagree with what you're saying, but I would state it inversely.
Okay. How would you state it?
I get a little bit of an emotional reaction with human exceptionalism.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I'm upset about the denigration of animals. It's that I react to what I feel is artificially lifting humanity.
So there's a part of you that thinks that human beings are just part of the flow of life and not exceptional in ways that we ought to...
And that we think we are.
That we think we are, because we're human beings.
Right. Like, I think I'm awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I can't, but to assume that everyone else thinks that might be a stretch.
Okay. So I got a little glimmer of Julia's worldview, and that's what we're doing tonight, is to try to shed a little light on each other's worldviews. Well, the interesting thing about this clip is that I did a lot of Googling to try to come up with a clip that described worldviews, and some of them were so dry and academic in the history of worldviews going back to the German philosophers. They used to call it Weltanschauung, right? Weltanschauung, and that literally translates to worldview.
Mm-hmm.
But the best clip I could find came from this clip, which is put out by an organization called the Impact 360 Institute, and it's a Christian organization, Christian mm-hmm. education. But I thought it was pretty well balanced. You know, sometimes in other citations that I've seen on the internet that talked about worldview, and a lot of them, I'd say 75% of the hits that you're going to get or more when you Google worldview are going to come from theologians, Christian organizations, somehow tied to religion.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that made me so curious that it was just by chance that I came upon a TED Talk by somebody whose name is Todd Weir. He's a professor of history and Christianity and modern culture at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands. And he did a TED Talk, and he went back and looked at the history of worldviews and that kind of thing. And according to him, what happened was, and why a lot of discussion of worldviews is dominated by religious, especially evangelistic Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Am I saying that right? My tongue is getting tied.
I'm overthinking it now.
Yeah.
Evangelistic.
That's what I thought I said.
Evangelists.
Yes, I got it.
Who
evangelicalized. I'm really confused now. But at any rate, why that term comes up a lot associated with religious organizations is that, according to Todd Weir, it was a reaction that happened in the 1900s, started in the 1900s, as a reaction to what was seen as a threat of the scientific worldview.
Mm-hmm.
The threat of the scientific worldview was that we could understand everything scientifically, and that pushes God into the real shadows back mm-hmm. there. There's no reason other than maybe to find a sense of purpose in life or to give us some moral rules and cues as to how we should lead our life. And so there was he was actually a Dutch theologian, and his name was Abram Kuyper. And he really began using that term worldview, and it just kind of caught on. So it's a reaction against the idea that the scientific worldview can give us all the answers.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was my exposure to it was Houston Smith wrote, he was a religious studies scholar, and I think from the early 1900s, I think he taught up until the perhaps 60s. Mm-hmm. And right, I remember reading an essay, Why Religion Matters in an Age of Materialism. So I think you're hitting on something which is a little bit of a time and place in history when there was the atheist communist threat, mm-hmm. and the world was a changing place. So it's certainly how I was first exposed to the word worldview. But I've come to understand it in a broader term.
So have I.
Yeah, that my religion is not just my worldview, but the fact that I'm in a Western civilization, the fact that I was raised a woman, those things all contribute and have affected my worldview, mm-hmm. beyond just, the little stuff about deities and afterlife.
Yeah. And there's other terms, core beliefs, web of beliefs that sometimes people use in that are kind of synonymous, as far as I can understand, with the term worldview. But why should we be aware of worldviews? That's the question, is why are we talking about it, worldviews, on a show about critical thinking?
Well, this actually brings me back to some other topics we've talked about in the past, of framing. How we frame our ideas or our conversations. And a lot of the times, without even realizing it, our worldview is framing issues and emphasizing certain things while not noticing others. And there are assumptions that are made that parts of those worldview aren't shared. For instance, I learned a lot about you today in how you feel about art and music. And those are, it doesn't surprise me that you have those views. It's just something we've never talked about before, because we meet here to talk about critical thinking, and art and music doesn't come up a whole lot. Mm-hmm. So it's easy for me to think that you don't value those things because we haven't had the opportunity to talk about it.
Yeah. And so the whole idea, and when you're talking about framing, I'm getting the image more when we frame things, we are generating the communication. It's communication coming out, so we frame things in a certain way. Mm-hmm. But the reverse can happen too with worldviews, and then we call it confirmation bias.
Mm, filtering.
Yes, filtering and confirmation bias, because confirmation bias, as we've talked about on previous shows, is you are attracted to things that you tend to believe in. So people are attracted to ideas that actually are part of their worldview. So let me find something here and read it, because this kind of hits that point. And I think I told you about this a while back, but I don't watch a lot of Fox TV. One reason is because I don't get TV, but I wouldn't probably tend to watch Fox News anyway. I think of Fox News, this will tell you something about my worldview or beliefs, I think of Fox News as being pretty opinionated, and much of it is, but they're, to my amazement, because I don't really know this person, have never really heard him. There was a Time article in the April 2nd edition of Time that talked about Shepard Smith. Mm-hmm. And Shepard Smith has the 3 o'clock news program on Fox. Mm-hmm. And he's not very popular with a lot of people on Fox, and especially some of the commentators who are more opinion-based.
There's a reason he's on at 3.
Exactly. Keep him there in the afternoon, like Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson and Laura Ingraham. And those are folks that have strong opinions, and that's opinion rather than news. Well, Shepard Smith makes it a point to really tried to be a news forecaster or a news broadcaster. And so I'm going to read just real quickly this quote from him from this Time article. Here's what he says. He says, "It depends on what you're looking for. Are you looking for news and information so that you can make decisions about your life and your family? Or are you looking for your worldview to be confirmed? For the second kind of viewer, when the facts fly in the face of your worldview, that can be unsettling. Sometimes then they don't like me. And there are other times when the facts work beautifully with their worldview, and then they're very happy." So
that sure sounds like confirmation bias to me.
It's a beautiful example, and without naming it, of explaining what confirmation bias is.
That's the nail in the head right there.
It is. And the nail in the coffin sometimes, mm-hmm. too.
Well, I like hearing things that agree with me.
Things that agree with you. I love that. Okay, let me see where we are here now, because I think that we want to talk a little bit about just some specific ways and reasons to become aware of worldview. So one, you already kind of alluded to identify fundamental differences, as well as common ground, because we've just come off of a three-part series in this program of having civil dialogues. And one of the things about having civil dialogues is to find common ground with that other person, and also to identify our differences and explore around those differences. Sometimes you have to do that to find common ground. So so this is how we are tying worldviews to critical thinking. And there's usually a strong connection, of course, between a person's worldview and his or her thoughts and feelings and opinions and behaviors, actually. Now, when there are extreme differences of opinion, that might indicate dramatic contrasts in worldviews. And people sometimes reach a wall in a conversation. And oftentimes that's a little signal that you're running up against a worldview difference between you that is sometimes pretty vast.
I don't have any thoughts on that.
Okay.
But sorry, that was my wall. I just ran into it.
Listeners, log this into your into your thinking clearly journal. Julia has no thoughts on something. Okay.
It only took, are we at 16 shows now? It only took 16 shows to get there.
Yeah, it's more than that. It's like in the 20s now.
Oh, my goodness. That is a good point, though, because a lot of the times we think we're working with some of the same basic primary parts, you know, that, for instance, that being kind and generous is a good thing. That's a moral good thing. Ayn Rand might disagree with you. And yet it seems like something that's, you know, could be a no-brainer.
Right. Yeah. And the interesting part of worldviews for me is these basic assumptions that we sometimes aren't even aware of that we make, that we just assume are true. I have some of those, but I'm not going to talk about them. You might be able to squeeze them out of me if you wanted to. But let me give you a list.
It's called the strong-arming fallacy.
Let me give you a list. There's 9 questions here that you can ask someone to start generating some ideas about their worldview. It'd be kind of fun to do with someone that is in your family or someone that you see often or maybe have differences of opinions about, is to try to get a glimmer of their worldview. So let's just run through these quickly, and then I will actually post this on our Facebook page.
They're just little questions. We'll get through them in a breeze.
Very, very little questions like, is there really an objective reality out there? If you believe there is one objective reality that's out there, you're a realist. Okay? If you believe there's one particular reality. If you believe that we can alter our reality, have different realities depending on individuals, then you're an idealist. That's, you know, some terms from philosophy. But anyway, that's a big question. Is there really an objective reality out there? Ask yourself this if you want to get a glimmer of your own worldview. A second question, what's the best way to tell what's real then? If you believe there is a reality out there, what's the best way to tell that? What are some of the other questions that we've thought about here?
Oh, let's see. What's the best way to know what's true as opposed to what's not true? That's sort of similar to the other question, but, you know, expounding on that a little.
Yeah.
This is one that I had a lot of fun with in philosophy. Is there a difference between the mind and the brain?
Okay, let's take that. Do you believe there's a difference between the mind and the brain? What is, and if so, what's the difference?
Well, first we have to define our terms.
Okay.
The brain is an organ in our body, and I've never seen mine, but I've heard it's there. Mm-hmm. And I knock on my head, it's not hollow. So I'm going to go with that assumption that I have a brain. Mind is tricky. I'm going to go with something a little bit more like consciousness. And I'm going to say that the brain is a part of the anatomy of consciousness or mind. The brain is a part of the anatomy that is the mind.
The brain is the anatomy that is the mind. Okay, that's
so the mind's like a bigger thing than the brain.
Yeah, that's pretty close to, I think, the way I think about it. I think of the brain is the physicality, you know, the thing that makes it all work, and the mind is just what it can do. So that's my distinction, is the mind, there's no difference between the brain and the mind. It's just that we're talking about either what the brain is in terms of neurons and interconnections between the neurons, and that's the brain, and the mind is what we can, what that organ can do. You know, it can deal with abstractions, it can deal with moral questions, it can do all these, in my view, pretty amazing things, and that's the difference between the brain and the mind. Now, are we close?
Well,
is there a difference?
There is a difference, because I'm saying the mind is more than that. I'm saying the mind is bigger than the brain.
Give me an example of what the mind is that the brain isn't.
It's our nervous system.
Well, the brain is the nervous system, right?
It's
the interconnection of the nerves. Well, I see what you're saying. When I say brain, I mean
all
the nerves. Yeah.
So not just the thing in your head.
No. It's not just in your head. It's down your spine. It's everything that is neurons. It's everything that affects the neurons, including hormones.
Now, see, this is a different definition, because when I play Operation, the brain is one little thing in the head. That's what they call the brain. And when you take the brain out, it's just, when my grandmother would cook scrambled eggs and brain, it was just a brain. There was no nervous system. There was no spine. So
I define it a little differently.
Defining it a little differently.
Okay, now, if you define the brain the way I define the brain, would there be a difference between brain and mind?
Yes.
Okay, that's what we want to get to. What's the difference? In other words, now we're both defining the brain the same way. All the nerves, all the nervous system, all the hormones affect the neurons and the neurotransmission and all that. All the physical parts of that.
And then there is the immeasurable experience. To me, there are certain aspects of the human experience that is only experiential. That is part of the mind. The mind is experiencing that and is the experience.
So the brain does not create that kind of experience that you're talking about?
That's hard for me to say, because I'm kind of stuck in my brain behind my eyes.
Yeah.
So it's really, you know, there is a certain point. I think I'm more willing to say that I don't know exactly what the limits of the mind are. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't think it's exactly the same as just the brain.
Yeah. Okay. That is a difference. And what we're hitting on is a very big question in cognitive science, philosophy, you know, that's a much debated hot topic, how consciousness comes to, you know, there's the easy and hard questions of consciousness. You know, easy questions is, how do we make sense out of the experiences that come in? And how do those affect us? The hard question is, how do we create this subjective experience that we have? Mm-hmm. So it's a big question, but...
we've only been asking it for tens of thousands of years, so I don't know why we haven't figured this out
exactly.
yet.
But you and I will differ on that. So we've isolated an area of difference, We could talk probably for the next 45 minutes, hour, once a day would be the regimen for that. But we don't have time to do that. But you can see where we're going with this and how you can use these kinds of questions to get some real meaningful understanding of each other.
I would like to add, so we have some more questions as we sort of explore that we just kind of got stuck right there in mind and brain. But another one that naturally follows is there such a thing as a spiritual experience or spiritualism, which is, you know, people like to differentiate from religion or dogmatic belief. Is there supernatural that transcends the physical world? That's I think a very common thing that we consider, but something I'd like to ask you, Bob, if you don't mind, how do you determine right from wrong?
Well, I've been reading a lot about that, and because that's a real controversial issue, and it gets back to our...
That's a real Bob answer right there.
Yeah, it gets back to you're finding out something about my how I get my, how I know what I know. And books and studies and research and philosophy and debates and all of those things, great podcasts about these things are a lot of the source of information.
But no crystal ball... No, tarot readings.
None of that. But let me answer that as best I can. I have to go back to the idea that that we've talked about on previous shows. We've talked about fast thinking versus slow thinking. Mm-hmm. In other words, intuition versus rational deliberation. The two different ways that we can approach trying to get answers for something. And so I do believe that we have a certain amount of evolved intuition that has evolved and co-evolved with our culture that give us clues about what's right and what's wrong. They've done studies to show that some people, if there is a bad smell in the room as part of the experiment, they bring in a bad smell, that people will be more critical of people who are different than them in some way, either politically different, ethnically different, and that you know, they've done those kinds of studies. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that a bad smell early on in our evolution, before we had all this complexity of civilization, it protected us against bad food. Mm-hmm. So we would smell the bad smell and we'd say, we're not going to eat that. Okay, we rejected it. And that now a bad smelling bad, this has led to the emotion of disgust. Mm-hmm. And we've repurposed the emotion of disgust to apply to people who are different than we are, people who think differently than we are. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's disgusting, you know, what they thought of. And how they're leading their life. And so there's a certain amount of intuition and intuitive aspects to, I think, morality. Mm-hmm. On the other hand...
It sounds like that makes living in a multicultural society much more challenging.
Definitely. And this having to do again with, and we're going to eventually do another program on tribalism.
Mm-hmm. Here real soon.
Yeah. And because these issues, worldview, tribalism, these terms are in the mainstream. You'll just see these terms. After listening to this show tonight, I can almost guarantee that you're going to pick out the idea of seeing this term worldview and where you really didn't pay much attention to it mm-hmm. before. But the other way that we can deal with moral questions is through our deliberate rational kinds of analysis. And we can use consequentialism, for example, look at the consequences of a person's action and try to figure out what's going to be the best for the most people and begin to answer moral questions that way.
You still haven't told me.
I'm saying that I.
How you.
Okay.
Besides reading books.
I'm an evolved human being, so there's a certain amount of.
There you go with your human exceptionalism again.
Yeah. I didn't say it's good. I just said I'm evolved. I don't mean evolved towards being. See, evolution doesn't have. It's not teleological. There's not a direction to it. We could have evolved into something that's not very good.
Or maybe we have.
Maybe we have. So what I'm saying is that I think that I'm influenced by both the intuition and on some problems, I'll actually step back and try to do a rational analysis. Now, again, it depends on how fast we have to make a decision because you can't go through an exercise in consequentialism, figuring out the consequences of something very fast. That you have to do ahead of time, mm-hmm. or have a long time to decide how you're going to act and what's right. So that's where intuition comes in, and that's the strength of intuition, is it's quick, mm-hmm. and it's usually pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know? So that's my answer to that question.
Okay.
But now you found out a little bit more about my worldview, didn't you?
I did, and I know the next time that we have been talking about having another debate here on Thinking Clearly, and I think I'm just not going to shower that day. I'm going to come in
a
smelling
civil
bad.
Dialogue.
I'm sorry. We had a civil dialogue.
Yes.
Where we disagreed and mm-hmm. we conversed about that. And I think it sounds to me, I'm going to take the hint, I'm not going to shower next time. I'm going to smell bad.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to get you a little more riled up that way.
Okay. Or, you know, we have another studio. I could go to that other studio. We could be in separate studios and do that too. That's disgusting, Julia.
I'll have to consider the consequentialism of that, how it'll affect our show.
Okay. A couple other questions. How do you believe the universe formed? Was it created by a creator, or do you believe in the Big Bang?
Well, Shiva was chasing a demon, and he couldn't quite catch him, but he did slay a tiger on his way, which he wore like a satchel. And when he did eventually get to the demon, he captured him. He didn't kill him. He threw him on the ground, and he started dancing. And the dance of Shiva on the demon is, in fact, the creation and the existence of our world as we know it.
Okay.
And when Shiva stops dancing, it's all over.
And the fact that I have not the foggiest idea what you're talking about tells you something about my worldview.
It's Hinduism. But it's Shaivite. Shaivite Hinduism.
I can't explain the Big Bang, but I'm not going to. It takes too much time. Great.
See? And my creation story was just to the point, that much more simple, must be true.
Yeah, but we could discuss whether that is actually more simple or not. Because what gave Shiva this power? You see, there's a lot of hidden complexity in what you're talking about when we talk about any of these myths.
Well, I mean, Shiva is blue, first of all.
Yes.
So, I mean, obviously he's powerful, timeless, ageless, and grand.
Yeah. And so that's more complexity, isn't it? Because what makes blue have those attributes?
No. It's not blue has those attributes. It's if you are timeless, if you are the timeless creator of the universe, you're going to be blue.
And where did that come about?
It is, man.
It just is.
I mean, just look at every painting of Shiva ever painted.
Well, you see, hidden behind these seemingly simple myths are complexities that kind of deny the idea that they're very simple. They're simple because they're stories. But behind any story, you can begin, if you were a child, you would begin to ask questions like I did in a childlike manner. Why is that? Why is that? Mm-hmm. And so you're forced to actually give explanations of causality or why one event preceded the other. And I'll go with the Big Bang myself, because
all right.
there's a lot that's not understood about that, but there is empirical, meaning through our senses, evidence that there was such a thing as a Big Bang, as the start of the universe. Okay, a couple other questions here. How do you determine what's right and wrong? You already asked that. Do you feel a sense of purpose in life, and how do you know what it is? So these are some of the basic questions that we can ask ourselves or others that we care about understanding their worldview in somewhat more depth. And that's one way of doing it.
I'll say also, as you'd mentioned earlier, sometimes you're having a conversation with someone, you're having a difference of opinions, and you hit that wall. You mentioned that before, and I went kind of blank thinking about it.
You hit a wall.
Okay. And those are, as you mentioned, great times to maybe take a couple steps back and ask some of these kind of fundamental questions to explore why you hit that wall.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if someone doesn't believe in an afterlife, they might have a very different feeling about murder. You know, it's and those are certain assumptions that you get into the meat of the conversation, and you forget that there are those kind of more foundational underlying worldviews.
Right. and assumptions that we make that sometimes we're not even aware of. So, and the topic is worldview. The questions for you are, what do you understand about your own worldview? Or maybe what don't you understand about your worldview? And real key question is here is, have you ever identified that a difference in worldviews was responsible for the lack of understanding between you and someone else? That's a real key question, because this is the link to critical thinking. The original title of this show, in my mind, was The Elephant in the Room of Critical Thinking, and the elephant being worldviews. Mm-hmm. We've been demonstrating a process that I would encourage you to get in to another person with if you want to experiment a little bit with this idea of worldviews, and that is listen. That's the key, is to listen very intently to the person and then infer something about their worldview and then make that as a tentative statement like we have been actually doing, and then ask them, is that right? Is that close? That's a sort of a tentative statement and what we call a checkout. You check it out by asking a question. That's really a powerful way of beginning to peel the onion and get below the surface in people's worldviews.
Mm-hmm. And really understanding people better. You know, it's not just about, you know, proving I'm right and you're wrong, but really coming to understand each other better as fellow humans.
Mm-hmm. All right. Quote, this is from Paul Von Ward, a blogger and author. I don't know that he's not a professor or any author or anything like that, but he's a blogger. But I like his quote about worldviews. He says, human thinking is shaped by a few basic assumptions about the nature of reality. They comprise a coherent or sometimes internally inconsistent worldview through which the individual interprets specific events and creates hypotheses about their cause. One's worldview is largely implicit, meaning it's obscure. It's not always, we don't always have an awareness of it, and does not arise to conscious awareness except through deliberate identification and exploration of beliefs that are usually never questioned by the individual. So basically, that's what we've been trying to demonstrate here as to how you can understand your own worldview and other people's worldview.
Can I ask you another question about your worldview, Bob?
You certainly can.
Now that we're down in the last few minutes. Why is critical thinking important to you? What, I mean, obviously you're motivated to talk to the radio audience and talk with me about critical thinking and the processes thereof. What's your motivation, okay, man?
Yeah, and we do have a caller, so I'm going to make it very, very short, because one of my assumptions is that logic is the best way to find out what's out there, to probe the universe.
Well, it's certainly a way, but yes, we'll take our caller who got through.
Hello?
Hello, caller.
Yes, welcome to Thinking
Julia,
Clearly.
I have to tell you that Shiva is not blue. It's Krishna that's blue. Now, Shiva might have done the dance and created the world and everything, but Krishna's the blue one.
Okay, well, how have you come to this knowledge that's different than mine?
Well, because you had said every picture of Shiva was blue. I don't know, but every picture of Krishna is blue.
Yeah,
he's the one who can divide himself up to a whole bunch of different people and dance with all the milkmaids.
Mm-hmm. 108 times.
There's lots of pictures.
It was a little bit more than dancing.
And he's blue. And it's kind of like, I don't know, a little bit of Hindu studies I've done. Just a little bit. Krishna is blue. It's just, you know, everybody knows that. But anyway, that's not my main point.
Well, do you know who Krishna was incarnated from?
No.
Vishnu, who's also blue.
I know there's Vishnu, there's Brahma, there's Shiva, there's Krishna.
There's no Brahma. There's Brahman.
Oh.
There's not really a Brahma. So that's the funny thing is... they say that there's the three gods, the three big gods of Hinduism.
One.
Right. There's Brahma, there's Vishnu, there's Shiva, except no one worships Brahma. He's just the creator god.
Fall into Krishna.
There's Shaivites, there's Vishnevas, there are Hare Krishnas. There's 300...
I can expose more to the...
There are
the
300 million Hindu gods.
Well, anyway, I wanted to
You really called to talk about the Big Bang, didn't you?
Well, the Big Bang, you know...
no, tell us why. I was just kidding.
The Big Bang versus you know, that a man in the sky created the world in 6 days, and it's either or, because I believe even Stephen Hawking said he wasn't after. No, no, it wasn't Stephen Hawking. I'm sorry. It was some other scientists weren't sure about the Big Bang. I mean, we're not really sure if the actual Big Bang happened, but I do feel like things have been going on for an awfully long time. My world,
we're not sure about the Big Bang, but we're sure Shiva was not blue.
Well, yeah, and we're not sure about the Big Bang either, but we are here. We know that. We're okay. Here. There's a world. There's the cosmos.
Tell us what was on your mind and why you called.
I like Darwin a lot. Uh-huh. I like Darwin's worldview because he didn't say, he really didn't say he didn't believe that there was a God. He just didn't necessarily believe it was a man in the sky. But, you know, something created the whole amazing universe. But he felt like, you know, evolution was so-called God's plan.
Do you know what Darwin got a degree in?
Reality.
Do you know what Darwin got his degree in?
What?
Theology. He was a theologian.
Yes, he was a theologian. He was actually going to, was groomed to become a preacher, but of a very kind of a progressive Christian sect, not real fundamentalist.
Okay,
but he went and studied, and in those days, they called scientists naturalists, and they usually were theologians that wanted to study God's creation, so to speak, to understand God's creation, to understand God better by exploring the creation. And basically...
You're going to have to make it really quick.
Okay, so he didn't believe in the supernatural because he felt like after exploring all the scientific ways that the world functions, that the laws of nature are so amazing and so tightly knit and, you know, that... It's amazing that anything works at all. So for the idea of God to try to prove himself by doing something contrary to, you know, all of these natural laws doesn't make sense.
Okay, thank
and
you.
And I kind of go along with that. I feel that the natural is super enough, and I've never seen any evidence
yes.
of
it.
Thank
very,
you very so
good.
Much,
Thank
caller.
You so much for your information and your ideas. We're a little bit past time. I will post on our Facebook page those questions. I will also post how you can take a 17-item test to test your worldview on our Facebook page. And we'll see you again.
Think for yourself, little man. Don't let them tell you that they have the plan, 'cause everyone's lost chin deep in the sand. And what they're trying to sell to you, you shouldn't be buying.
This program was produced in KMUD's Redway Studios and is provided courtesy of KMUD, People Powered Radio.